is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Australia. After an election, Australia is tested. Albanese, the new prime minister, goes the headline from the Australian Financial Review. Promises fresh review to kick Chinese firm out of Darwin port. This is a strange headline, so in reading it, I thought Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who spent weeks in Australia at Perth, Western Australia, can help me understand not only the new prime minister and the new Labour government, but also this complication about China in Darwin, the part to the north, and incidents in which it appears that the People's Republic of China is testing the new leader of Australia. Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Yes, that's correct. The Labour government has 77 seats in the lower house of parliament. That gives them a two-seat majority. There is no party with a majority in the Senate, which makes the government's job difficult because it does have to negotiate passage of finance bills, particularly through the Senate. And that can be controversial because if a government cannot pass its finance bills in two successive attempts through the Senate, then they have to go back for a new election. I don't think that's going to happen because the Greens and the so-called teal independents, which are actually Greens who claim to be independent, they will vote with the government to secure passage of the government's bill, but they will demand a price for that from the Labour Party, which governs.
In anticipation of the election, I read the statements by the Labour Party and the statements by the Liberal Party, which is the Conservative Party of the previous Prime Minister. And I was impressed that Labour was consistent in its campaign strategy of emphasizing climate change, meeting the net zero ambitions of the Glasgow meeting of 2021. How is the climate story translated into the present circumstances of Australia? Australia, after all, is rich in natural resources, including coal, but all metals, iron ore. It is a basket of heavy industry.
Well, the reality is that Australia was not only a producer of virtually all the great metal groups that you need, but it was a heavily industrialized power at one stage. Now it's largely a service economy, and the great mining wealth, which just digging and selling, largely to the People's Republic of China and others, but largely to the PRC, that's a rural environment. So you've got a country which is now heavily urbanized, one of the most heavily urbanized countries in the world, with something like 89% of the population in the coastal urban centers. And they tend to vote in a rabidly utopian fashion. And utopian thinking was once thought to be sort of peaceful and benign and wishful, dreamlike thinking. But in fact, the rabid utopianism we see now in the major Western societies has become, if you like, viciously utopian. In other words, they resist any thought of a balanced economy. So you had the vote, which got Labour in and got a lot of Greens and these so-called teal independents, all on the side of the climate change politics. And the Liberal Party, which had been in power for 9 years, started to fight this election by compromising on the climate change politics and in order to look more like Labour, look more like the Greens and so on. And of course, green light ain't going to get you elected if you're a Conservative government. So they, in fact, compromised their identity and, of course, ended up losing the election. And there's a great argument to say that they would have been better had they fought on a much more balanced climate discussion, one which embraces the absolute need to keep Australian domestic electricity and energy prices low because of the use of fossil fuels. And they could have used it at that time to start the debate on the introduction of nuclear power for Australia. Now, that debate has subsequently started since the election, but it was too late for the Liberal government. So you've got a very utopian urban electorate which dominates the new Australian Parliament, and the new is as a result of the Liberal Party losing power. They've had a leadership shuffle. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, resigned, and the former Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, who is from the really conservative wing of the Liberal Party, has taken over as leader of the Liberal Party and head of the opposition.
The Australian economy, as of these last days, is reported as strong in the first quarter. I note that the Australian Central Bank is tightening rates. And is the perception, you were in Perth, Western Australia, but is the perception east and west that the economy is sturdy or is it in decline? Because we have great anxiety here in North America now as to whether we're faced with a recession. Is that talk commonplace in Australia?
Yes, and it's commonplace not only in Western Australia, where I spend a lot of the time, but it was also in the eastern states, and it's actually even more prevalent there because the Western Australia lives in a true bubble. They've been making so much money from the export, particularly of iron ore, but also nickel and lithium and gold and so on, that they think nothing is ever going to touch them when it's just about to. But there is a talk of the economic pressures emerging very rapidly this year as inflation starts to bite, and inflation was very noticeable in all of Australia in the last few months, and it's predicted to be even worse by the end of the year, doubling of food prices and the like. Certainly there's been a massive increase in petrol prices, gasoline, and what we're likely to see before the end of the year is an increase in domestic electricity prices. And if that's not all inflationary, then I don't know what is. So the Reserve Bank's interest rates by half a percent was actually quite steep. There'll be, as you say, more to come before the end of the year. But the government then is contradicting that attempt to restrain inflation by trying to push through an increase in the minimum wage nationally by about 5%. And that will almost certainly just reignite the inflation. At the same time, the new Labor government is, as is its historic wont, increasing domestic spending at a significant rate, promising all manner of expenditures in the social spectrum, including, you know, basically childcare for all the country, even if they don't have children and the like. So what you're going to get out of that is a situation where the Labor Party will not be able to live up to its promise of reducing the national debt, which had reached $1 trillion Australian, you know, in the neighborhood of 720 million US. And they'll have to increase the debt rather than reduce it. And that means that they will not be able to commit, as they had promised, to continuing the increase in defense spending. So the domestic agenda is basically going to stop the Albanese government from effectively improving its strategic stance vis-a-vis the People's Republic of China at a time when Beijing has taken advantage of the Ukraine-Russia war to really step up its movements into the Indo-Pacific region.
Let us turn to China confronting the new Albanese government. This is Gregory Copley, returned from Perth, Australia. That's Western Australia. The Indo-Pacific is anchored by Australia and its alliance with the United States and other important allies of the United States. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.